You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. Happy Wednesday. Hope your work days are ending well this afternoon or starting off on a good foot if you are working second or third shift. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. One of the great privileges of this job that I do with each and every one of you is that I get to talk to some really interesting people. And my most favorite people often are not just the academics and the data scientists, but those who have served as public servants, serving our country, our cities, our states. And we have a distinguished public servant joining us today. Her name is Ambassador Cynthia Eifert. She has had a storied career as a senior foreign service officer that spanned just under 40 years, including 3 years of service as the U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Angola. Now, I usually don't read people's resumes in full, but I'm going to do this. And Cynthia, I beg your forgiveness. You know all that you have accomplished, but our listeners don't, and I want to share with them. You currently are the President Emerita of the Public Diplomacy Association of America. You've served on the boards of the Decor Bacon Foundation, the Public Diplomacy Council, the Women's National Democratic Club. Your service goes on and on after your retirement, but let me tell people a bit about your experience as a foreign service officer. Again, you were the ambassador to the Republic of Angola for 3 years. You were deputy commandant for international affairs at the U.S. Army War College. You are an associate at the Institute for the Study of Diplomacy at Georgetown University, where you did that for 2 years. And you joined the Foreign Service back in 1977. You then served in Yugoslavia for, as I count it, 4 years. You served in the German Democratic Republic. For those who are not old enough to remember, it didn't used to just be one Germany. You served in the German Democratic Republic. You've served in Mozambique. When you worked in Vienna, Austria, you were on the staff of both the U.S. Embassy and the U.S. delegation to the Conference on Security and Cooperation in Europe, as well as volunteering for temporary duty in Somalia with the U.S. Liaison Office. You were the Deputy Counselor for Public Affairs at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow, ladies and gentlemen, from 1997 to 2000. And then you were detailed to the Organization for Cooperation and Security in Europe to oversee post-conflict reconstruction of the media sector in Kosovo. Of course, understanding how important a vigorous fourth estate the media is in fully functioning democracies. From 2001 to 2002, you were an advisor to the Associate United States Trade Representative, and you directed all public diplomacy and public affairs for the Bureau of African Affairs at the Department of State from August 2002 to July 2004. You hold degrees from Georgetown, Duke, and the National Defense University. And you've received many State Department Meritorious Honor and Superior Honor Awards. You've received an honorary degree from the U.S. Army War College and a decoration for distinguished civilian service from the U.S. Army. May I begin, Madam Ambassador, by just simply saying thank you for a lifetime of service to our country.
Well, I have to say that it was a wonderful career, and I've had great fun. And if I can put a little question thing in right now,
please.
If I can ask your audience, if they're interested in the sort of work of being overseas, of representing the country, we very much need people from the Midwest, because there are a lot of people from the two coasts, people who have parents who are in the Foreign Service, but the process is very fair and very open. And we need representatives from the Midwest. I grew up in Detroit. I knew nobody in the Foreign Service, never even heard of it until I found a secondhand book. And it struck me as maybe a good idea. So please, if any in your audience would like to join the Foreign Service, it's a long process, only about 1 out of 100 ever get in, but you can find out all about it at our website, www.state.gov/careers. So please think about it.
I love the plug for public service. I often refer to my time as a public servant as the most deeply meaningful of all of my work experiences. When we were preparing for the show, Cynthia and I, you talked a little bit about I had gone through the first two stages to actually enter the Foreign Service before I got distracted by a big, huge case called Enron and decided I was gonna work on that for a while. Cynthia, let's start. I want to talk about and give some life to what diplomatic work is. I think people think spies, right? That's what they think of. Or they hit the snooze button because they don't get it. So I was hoping, Cynthia, you could help breathe some life and share some of your specific experiences from any one of the very diverse regions that you have worked in over your long career.
Well, let me give you a little interesting story. I was in Angola in my office as ambassador, and my consular officer came in, and she said, "Did you know that 50 Cent, the rapper, is coming to Angola?" And I said, "Oh, that's exciting." She says, "And the impresario that we've had real trouble with is the one who's bringing him." And I said, "Uh-oh. Why don't you get out to the airport and see if you can make contact and come back and tell me what's going on?" So she went out. A couple hours later, she came back and said, "We are in trouble." The impresario, as had been his practice, had taken the passports of all the crew and 50 Cent and had said that they, unless they did a series of extra concerts, he wouldn't give them back. And one of the crew members had leaned over to her and said, "We're not going to be held up here. Can you get guns around here?"
Oh.
Yes, exactly.
Which well, you answer, literally call a diplomatic emergency. Yeah.
Yes. So, and now the truth was, is you could get guns because it was right after the Civil War and they were everywhere. And I said, "Well, I think we better step in here." So I called the impresario and I said, "You people need to go to the U.S. from time to time with visas in order to be able to recruit people, correct?" He said, "Yep." I said, "If you don't give those passports back to 50 Cent and his crew immediately, you and anyone associated with you will never get a U.S. visa as long as I'm around." And he said, "Oh, no, no, there's been a misunderstanding." Okay. Problem two, she said, "That's great. His people are happy. They're at the hotel. But they're planning to go to the hospital tomorrow." And she said, "The trouble is that his crew throw $10 bills around as they walk through any place they go. And there will be a riot. And people in the hospital are going to get hurt." And I said, "Well, I tell you what, why don't we invite him to come and do his thing here at the embassy where I have Marine guards and I can supervise."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Okay." So we did it. And I said, "And not only that, but we are very active participants in President George W. Bush's PEPFAR program against HIV/AIDS. And maybe he will do a little speech about avoiding HIV/AIDS. I said, "Then we would have an even better thing." So she said, "Okay, I'll see." And sure enough, it worked. Oh, and we also invited winners from a contest we had given to come and meet him at the embassy. So they're the ones that got the money that was being thrown. Mm-hmm. Any rate, so the next day he came. It worked perfectly. His speech was a little shorter than I expected. He said, "Have sex. Have safe sex." All right, but short and pithy. But we then did a long segment on that, which, by the way, went out on every radio frequency across Angola, which was more people we had been able to reach about the message of how to avoid HIV/AIDS. So what I want to do is to just show, well, later, the Washington Post had a little comment about what in the world was the U.S. Embassy thinking, bringing 50 Cent in to be a representative of the U.S. Well, we hadn't brought him in. We were keeping disasters from happening. So three things about what this says about diplomatic life. Well, first off, it's always different. But first, our job is to protect American citizens. Now, we were protecting 50 Cent and his crew, but we protect students, professors, visitors,
journalists.
Journalists, very much journalists, when they come. And that's our number one job when we're overseas. Secondly, we are protecting the U.S.'s economic contracts and how they can make money overseas and make sure that they're treated fairly. So we get to assist in the economic health of the country. And then thirdly, we're often misunderstood, as we were. But all in all, what we do is absolutely essential and is making America really great, if I may use a phrase.
Making America really great. She did that work, continues to do that work, nearly 40 years as a senior foreign service officer. We're talking with Ambassador Cynthia Eford. I have to say, Madam Ambassador, if anyone would have told me that you and I would be talking about 50 Cent, I would have said, I'm sorry, are you talking about Ambassador Cynthia Eford or some other guest? That was literally nowhere, not even close to anywhere on my bingo card this afternoon. I wanted to ask you this. When, what sort of skills would you describe as a foreign service officer, the skill sets that are needed to do that job? We have just a little bit under a minute, so if you could keep this one short, we're going to go deeper when we get back. But please, go ahead.
Okay.
What are, just very briefly, what are some of the essential skills?
Well, we have to be fluent in cross-cultural communication. We have to be able to analyze a situation, analyze a culture, and figure out how to achieve U.S. objectives within that culture. Mm. We have to be, all of us take our oath to the Constitution. So we also have to have strong moral fiber.
Strong moral fiber, analytical heft, the ability to analyze complex situation accurately, and then advocate for U.S. interest using fluent cross-cultural communications. I want all of us to sit with that for a moment, because I think when we look and we want to ask more of our elected officials, the elected official may set the tone, but they are also ultimately responsible for the folks that fill out the ranks and who they want leading these organizations like the U.S. State Department. And folks up and down the food chain take their lead from who sits at the top of those organizations. We've got U.S. Ambassador Cynthia Eford with her 40 years as a senior foreign service officer, including 3 years as U.S. ambassador to the Republic of Angola. When we come back on the other side, we're gonna dig into what the obligations, how does the work of the foreign service officer actually operate? What happens if a diplomat is given an immoral or an unconstitutional directive? We're gonna ask the tough questions. We're gonna peel back the layers of the onion and make it all the more real for each and every one of you. My name is Maggie Dawn. You got a question or comment for the ambassador? First of all, start with thanks. You can text that 855-757.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Speaking of civics, foreign service officers know a little bit about that, as well as handling cross-cultural communications effectively to advance U.S. interests. We know this because we're talking with former U.S. Ambassador to Angola, Cynthia Eford. She has nearly 40 years of experience as a senior foreign service officer. She's served basically all over the world, and she's here to share some of her wisdom with each and every one of us. Welcome back, Madam Ambassador. Thank you again. And because the stories of foreign service officers are so fascinating, before we moved on to like the deep thoughts, I wanted to ask you, I know you have another story that you wanted to share with our listeners. Please.
Well, I think one reason I want to talk about this is because of the really draconian cuts in global health that are being announced. When I was in Angola, the Minister of Health from there had asked if he could take a phone call. And so he did. And when I came in, he had his head in his hands. And I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "There's a disease that has broken out. And I just got word that it is a hemorrhagic fever, like Ebola, but worse.
Worse.
It's called Marburg." And I said, "You know, the U.S. will be on your side." And he looked at me and he said, "Yes, we always count on you." And as a result, we had been working on a malaria program with them, and we were able to let that lab be used to follow up the cases of Marburg. And the reason that none of your viewers have or your listeners have heard about Marburg is because we were able to work with the Angolans to contain it. Mm. There are 168 embassies around the world, and we are early warning posts for health problems, for security problems, for military problems, for all these things that Washington, well, they'll get a tiny bit of a cable. Mm-hmm. But if you get rid of those embassies, there is no early warning. If you get rid of global health, there is nobody finding the next endemic disease that might come to our shores.
It's truly, truly stunning, the fact that the human relationships, the human intelligence, right, which is the backbone of all diplomacy, it relies on credible actors. It relies on people knowing that if they're speaking with Ambassador to the Republic of Angola, Ambassador Eford, that what she says and the representations that you make on behalf of the United States will hold true. I want to ask you, before we get into, like, what do you do if you get a directive that you think is a terrible idea? I just want to hold that for a second, because one of our listeners has a question that relates to our discussion here. Annie in Watertown asks this question: after watching the impeachment hearings of Donald Trump, and watching in other hearings, amazingly qualified intelligence and senior Foreign Service officials, frankly, have their words twisted, misconstrued, otherwise disrespected, and being misunderstood. How does this have an impact on recruitment? Does it have an impact on morale? Or is the Foreign Service officer, especially the experienced Foreign Service officer who may be testifying before Congress, inured to that? In other words, mission centric, we keep moving, and it's water off a duck's back. How is this, you know, some of the overt disrespect, I'll just say it that way, how has that impacted the State Department and Foreign Service officials?
Well, we're human beings, and we're out in often difficult places, and our families are out there with us. Also suffering from being far away from family and so forth, although often we have decent living situations. So, yes, it hurts to find that you're not respected, that the work you're doing isn't. But on the other hand, we signed up to serve whichever administration the American people decide to put into power. And as a result, our first goal is to advise that administration as to what will really work. Where are we? What can we do? But then, once the decision has been taken, whether it's a decision that we agree with or not, it is our job to loyally follow the results. And the only option, if you think that what you have been asked to do is illegal or unconstitutional or just plain too dumb to bear, you can resign. But the Foreign Service is not partisan, just like the military. And I hope, are continuing to resist any effort to make it partisan. I'm not hearing you right now.
My apologies, Madam Ambassador. When you and I were discussing in preparation for today's interview, and you were going through these fundamental sort of tasks, the meat and potatoes of being a senior Foreign Service officer, and you were explaining, it is to give your best objective, apolitical advice, to write it down if that's necessary, to express disagreement respectfully and appropriate, to resign if you believe something is illegal, but that those are very rare occurrences. And even if you're given a directive that in your personal viewpoint might not be the right decision, you faithfully execute that order that has been given you. It occurs to me that there are so many expert professionals up and down the ranks of public servants that abide by a very similar code. We are human beings, we have our own beliefs, but we show up and we do our jobs to the best of our ability, and we do so faithfully every day. Folks, we're talking with former ambassador to the Republic of Angola, Cynthia Eford. She's going to return on the other side. We're going to continue this discussion. Please stay with us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Welcome back, everyone. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. When big events happen around the world, there are tireless, dedicated employees of the State Department, foreign service officials that are there on the ground communicating intelligence, helping to diffuse volatile situations, many of which we never hear about because things don't get worse. It is the 36th anniversary of that moment in Tiananmen Square where a student faced off against a tank. It is those kinds of situations that do make the press that we do hear about, but again, so many more, especially in the areas of public health, that our Foreign Service officials have an incredible impact. We have one of those career senior Foreign Service officials joining us today as our special guest here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Her name is Ambassador Cynthia Eford. She served, again, for nearly 40 years, three of which was as ambassador to the Republic of Angola. One of our listeners texting in on the text lines over the break had a very particular question for you, Ambassador, and I thought I would just start there because it was such an interesting one. And that is, when you were serving at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow back in the late 90s, was the White House, the Russian equivalent of the White House, still damaged from the Yeltsin tanks when you were there, or had it been repaired? I love it. We've got very informed listeners here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Well, actually, it had been pretty much repaired. I was there during the period, just at the end of the Yeltsin period. He was having real trouble with drink or health issues or whatever. And there was a particular press conference with President Clinton where President Clinton helped him along. And I have to tell you, I'm sorry to say, that when Putin came on the scene, we thought, aha, this is a much younger person. He's been in Germany, lived there, granted as a spy, but he had been there. Maybe he will be able to retrieve the situation. And of course, what happened was it just got worse because he just took over the oligarch's graft. And what we see now with the terrible situation in Ukraine is the result of him slowly over the last 20 years developing a technique of creating conflicts, starting in Georgia where they invaded, and now, of course, in Ukraine. And it is because I think we have not sufficiently stood up to him, or that we have wavered in our support for our democratic values.
If I can ask you a follow-up question to that, Ambassador, why aren't we hearing from more retired Foreign Service officials? And if they are speaking in ways, are there places that we, the general public, should be going to look? Or as it is, and I think one of the norms that I always understood is that most career Foreign Service officials will not speak out and criticize current administrations or politicians because, again, you serve over a career, you serve Republicans and Democrats, you take on this very serious oath duty to be more apolitical and to not say those things. Is it a unique moment? Do you think your former colleagues, retired Foreign Service officials, should be speaking out more on this moment, especially given, I think, the threat that Vladimir Putin poses to, frankly, many of our allies in Western Europe and democratic order writ large?
Well, actually, I see a lot of former Foreign Service officers, ambassadors speaking out. Generally, they are identified by their current role, the think tank they're working for. One name comes to mind, Ambassador McFaul, former yes. ambassador to Russia. He's often on CNN, I think, or MSNBC. But most of us don't want to be involved in U.S. politics, but we very much want our expertise and our concern and our ability to analyze cross-cultural issues to be able to come to the fore.
Yeah, we've had a few guests on from the Council on Foreign Relations, other mm-hmm. of these think tanks trying to get just myself and other average folks the benefit of your expertise and these years of experience. And so let's talk a little bit about that. Why is understanding the importance of places like USAID and the State Department and what foreign services, why is that so important in this moment particularly?
Well, I think I'd like to speak a little bit about USAID, partly because there's a terrible misconception about how generous we are on foreign aid. Actually, the U.S. puts about 0.2% of our federal budget into foreign assistance. And although most Americans think it's much more than that, they, by a strong majority, I read somewhere 62%, oppose us not providing food, health, and security assistance to poor countries. You know, the U.S. is a country of can-do, generous people. Mm. And we do care about the human rights. We do care about people being poor. I think it's a misunderstanding. When they made the draconian DOGE cuts in USAID, there were antiretroviral to combat HIV/AIDS people, medicines sitting on the shelves that the contractors were told they could not take off and give to people. And I read some scientists did a study that there are maybe 100 people in the world each hour dying because of our cuts in foreign assistance. And this isn't given only because we care about other human beings. There are great benefits to the U.S. as well. Because we are seen as strong supporters of human rights, of free media, of economic benefits across the society, we're given a seat at the table that no other country has been able to have. And so that gives us a chance to carry out our objectives in a fair and open way. Our work in free media abroad, I remember when I was redoing the, helping to rehab the media sector, they said, how in the U.S. do you fund media so that it is fair and free and not under the government's thumb? And I said, well, NPR PBS, for instance, they get contributions from people. And they said, people just give them money? And I said, yeah, that's the American way. The government's money makes them able to reach a wider audience, but it's the listeners who pay for the actual programming.
Mm. To your point specifically, Ambassador Eford, I am sad to share with you and our listeners that an article just posted a wee bit ago today, like three minutes ago in the New York Times, says nearly all remaining Voice of America employees could be fired under a new proposed restructuring. Again, the Voice of America, founded in 1942 to combat Nazi propaganda, to stand up for the Fourth Estate, the free and vigorous press, to hold governments and government actors and elected officials accountable. What you're describing is something that wonky folks will often term soft power. In other words, it's not when the United States sends troops. It is when we have diplomats on the ground assisting countries and governments. It's when people know that we will show up when there is a potential Ebola-like outbreak to help save lives, to help better people's lives across the globe. But this is done because doing so in both the short, medium, and of course the long term as well, actually serves U.S. interests. People listen to us. They'll do what we ask when we have needs, when we ask them to do different things to impact geopolitics. Ambassador, am I defining soft power correctly? Is that what people mean when they use that term? And how would you additionally tell somebody, hey, sitting in I don't know, Wausau this afternoon, why this is so important to the person in Wausau or up in the near the Apostle Islands or wherever folks may be across this beautiful state?
Well, it is true. Diplomacy is a very cheap tool, because it doesn't cost very much to have embassies around the world. As I said, 168. What's very expensive is any military action. And I think as a people, we tend to want a quick, fast solution. And oftentimes military solutions seem as though they will be quick and fast. But as we've seen from the war on terrorism, from Afghanistan, from Vietnam War, even the Second World War, we won that war, but the Soviet Union created afterwards, and we had to fight the Cold War that followed afterwards. Mm-hmm. So diplomacy is a cheap tool that can be deployed around the world and that can provide, as I said, protection for our citizens, increased reach of our economic power, and the spread of the kind of prosperity that makes people happy to stay at home rather than wanting to come here. Also, if that nice person in Wausau is planning or has children who are going to go to university, the cost of their university education is partly covered by foreign students.
By foreign students, yes.
Who are paying their full share for the tuition.
Ambassador, I know you're one smart cookie, but that is a little wrinkle that I have talked about with my friends. I know a lot about higher education administration, and most people do not realize that a huge chunk of the operating budgets of every single college and university, public and private, the creme de la creme to smaller, less known universities and colleges, is paid by international students who pay full tuition. Basically, almost nobody else in the United States pays the full load of tuition. International students do. It is an increasingly essential component of revenue for all of our institutions of higher learning. And as we look at an incredible demographic crunch coming in the next 10 to 15 years, there will be fewer people in that age range of 17 to approximately 25. Boy, that is going to pose quite a challenge for higher education. So again, folks can extrapolate from that what they will, given this administration's dim view and attacks on international students writ large. Ambassador, we have just about a minute left. What do you want Wisconsinites and Americans listening to you today to know? And more importantly, what should they do to help support cheap diplomacy that has a long reach of America's soft power?
I think it's partly just being aware that their diplomatic corps is out there and is doing your business for you. Mm. And whether it's your kid that gets picked up overseas and needs to be supported, or whether it's your business, or whether it's just that you want America to be great because it's good.
America to be great because it's good. My sincere thanks to former U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Angola, Cynthia Eford. Such a pleasure. We have some breaking news on the state budget coming up. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're all about real news and great conversation. We just finished one of those conversations with former U.S. Ambassador to the Republic of Angola, Cynthia Eford. My big, big thanks to her, not only for her service, but sharing some of her wisdom and time with all of us this afternoon. We have some breaking news for all of you. It looks like the state's biennial budget is indeed in the crossfire. Budget negotiations have broken down. They are at a, quote, impasse. Those negotiations have been going on for the past few months with Governor Evers' office, as well as Assembly and Senate Republicans. They had reached agreement on cuts, income tax cuts for the middle class. Hey, that's a good thing. Some income tax relief for certain retirees. But Republicans can't find their way to, fund childcare, properly fund public education, as well as our university system here in the state. They don't, I guess, want to keep higher education affordable for regular Wisconsinites. That's what's broken down. They don't want to invest in childcare, public education, and our university system. I just do not understand it. And the statements coming out from the MAGA regime and our state government are simply a wee hard to swallow, if I may say so myself. This is from Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu and Senate Joint Finance Committee Co-Chair Howard Markline of Spring Green. They said this: since April, we have engaged in good faith negotiations with Governor Evers and his staff to establish the outline of a bipartisan state budget. Unfortunately, those talks have reached an impasse. Both sides of these negotiations work to find compromise and do what is best for the state of Wisconsin. Of course, for the MAGA regime, that means tax breaks for rich people. However, we have reached a point where Governor Evers' spending priorities have extended beyond what taxpayers can afford. Saying this while we sit on a $4 billion surplus just sitting in the general fund, I don't know, Lemahieu and Markline, maybe spend a little bit on public education. Maybe make the investments in our University of Wisconsin system that Wisconsinites deserve, so that we can all, if we want to, go to university and afford it and not end up riddled with hundreds of thousands of dollars of student debt. They continued, the Joint Committee on Finance has successfully crafted three consecutive budgets that were signed by Governor Evers. We are confident that the legislature will pass a responsible budget that the governor will sign into law. That's my technical commentary on it. Here's the statement on the budget impasse from Speaker Robin Voss and Assembly Finance Co-Chair Mark Bourne of Beaver Dam. We would like to thank Governor Evers and his staff for engaging in good faith negotiations to try to reach consensus on large portions of the state budget. We remain open to discussions, blah, blah, blah. It's just so frustrating. It shouldn't be this hard to do what middle class people need. We need really good public schools. We need more mental health access and treatment for our young people. We talked about that today on the show. We need our university system, the crown jewel of the Wisconsin education system, which used to be a huge source of pride for every Wisconsinite, regardless if you got a degree from a UW system school or not. They don't want to fund our universities. They don't want to pay for childcare. How are you going to have workers if the workers can't afford the childcare? They're not talking about the federal cuts to the Department of Education. They want to, what, not fund public schools here enough? Absolutely unbelievable. My big thanks to my colleagues, Luke Mathers and Dan Schaefer, for breaking this news and sharing it with me so that I could share it with each and every one of you. It is Wednesday, and I always like to promise you a little over the hump and Trump on Wednesday afternoons. We got a little time to do that, a little positivity in the middle of your week and mine, I may add. And my positivity this week is happy Pride, everybody. I am so excited that it is Pride Month, and I am very excited to share with you all that Civic Media will be walking in the city of Milwaukee's Pride Parade. It is one of the longest running Pride parades in the country. It is huge. It is so much fun. The weather looks chef's kiss fantastic for this Sunday. So if you would like to see me and a bunch of my colleagues from Civic Media walking in the Pride Parade, give us a wave, maybe catch some beads and candy, come on out. It is in the near South Side, the Third Ward, not Third Ward, like Fifth Ward, Walker's Point area, the near South Side of Milwaukee. I think step off is at, I want to say 1 o'clock, but get there early, stay late. Basically, everybody who wants to have fun together in the entirety of southeastern Wisconsin will be in the Pride Parade, including yours truly. Pride Fest kicks off Thursday, that is tomorrow, June 5th at the Summerfest Grounds or the Henry Meyer Festival Park. There's Ride with Pride. It is a huge Harley Davidson ride that will kick off on June 7th this weekend. I have been in that motorcycle ride. Mom, turn off the radio. She gets nervous when I get on the back of people's motorcycles. Yes, I have done that Harley ride. It is a bunch of fun. And in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin this weekend, the 9th annual Open Door Pride Festival. That's going to be on June 28th, a little bit later. The Sheboygan, we had a fabulous guest, Leah Hibble, on from Sheboygan. She sits on their school board. They're going to have a Pride picnic also on June 28th. Fabulous activities occurring all across the state. What else we got? The Big Gay Pride Market. I love this one. That's going to be in Madison from June 13th, 14th, and 15th, where you can shop at more than 200 queer and queer ally vendors over 3 days. Sun Prairie's Pride Fest, June 28th. Fox Valley Pride on June 21st. Wausau, June 7th. I'll keep sharing these upcoming events as we move through the month. That's going to do it for me. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together for pride. Have a good one, everybody.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.